This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Jason Weingarten, professional sports bettor, will join us. We'll talk some baseball awards, pennant races. I haven't talked baseball in a while with all the football. It's been a lot of football, so excited to talk some baseball. And I think Jason's got some football thoughts and bets, so excited to talk to him. And I'll get to some baseball here in a minute. But football is where we'll start. Haven't talked since the Jets 49ers game on Monday. Highly anticipated, and I'll get to my thoughts here. Bills Dolphins, a good Thursday night game, so I have a thought and a bet on that. But I wouldn't give up on the Jets. I wouldn't look. I don't think you can spin that as a positive outcome, a positive night. But I think, looking back, and you know, this idea that they were blown out, and which they were, but this idea that, hey, now you can just cross them off, same old Jets, I wouldn't go that far. It's not like it was 40-0. I mean, they were favored on the live line middle of the second quarter, end of the second quarter, where they were up 7-3. They showed some positive things. Rodgers looked rusty, but he made some good throws. And this was a bad pick by me too, and the picks were pretty good in general, but Russ should have been expected. Rodgers hasn't played in forever. Offensive line, it just no preseason. 49ers just have a ton of talent and a lot more continuity. I thought Shanahan did a good job against Salah, and that would be the biggest concern going forward. Obviously, the defense, but you figure the defense will play better. It just looks like, you know, Salah got out-coached schematically, and you wonder when he goes against some of these better coaches. And not only the better coaches, but these better coaches that have good rosters, what's that going to look like? And look, if he doesn't win a few of these games, or if it's 2-3, 1-4, something like that, I don't know that he's around for the second half of the season, but let's not go there yet, because look, Belichick is lurking and he's doing a million media things, whether he wants to coach the Jets or the Giants this year, next year. Belichick's probably going to coach again, and you can tell he wants another job, but we'll leave that alone for the moment. I think the Jets, I wouldn't overreact. Now, if they didn't play well against the Titans and they're 0-2 or they're 1-3 with a soft schedule coming up, they do get the Titans and the Broncos and the Steelers. The Steelers looked a little better than maybe we thought on a Sunday. There's a path here for the Jets to still be successful. Again, you can't call it a success, but it wasn't a complete disaster. Rodgers, first off, he made it through the game healthy, which you would like to be more competitive, but he made it through the game healthy. You know, showed some chemistries with Garrett Wilson, got some of the rust off. And it wasn't even as close as the 32-19 final. 49ers just pulled away second half, scored basically every time they touched the ball after the first couple drives. But wouldn't panic. I think the Jets can still have a 10-11 win season. And look, there's obviously a gap between the 49ers and the Jets, but that's you take baby steps if you're the Jets. Just beat the Titans this week. Maybe things start to look a little bit better. And again, I think the Jets are still primed to to have a good season here. The McCaffrey thing was weird, where he gets ruled out right before the game, and then Mason, the backup running back, winds up starting, says, well, I knew Friday night I was starting, and then he kind of backtracks. If the league is going to be in bed with all these betting companies like they are, you got to be a little more honest. If you know McCaffrey's not playing, you should probably say McCaffrey's not playing. Then again, there's enough plausible deniability where they can say, hey, we told the kid he was going to start if McCaffrey was out, if he was limited. There's enough, you can be vague enough where it's just hard to catch you, and the league probably wants to sweep this under the rug as much as anyone, but it is a bad look if the 49ers knew on Friday night McCaffrey wasn't playing and they told everybody up until game time that, yeah, he should be good to go. We'll see, when you knew the whole time he wasn't playing. But again, it's very hard to prove. The game coming up Thursday is a good one. Bills, Dolphins survive against Jacksonville. We're down big. Jacksonville is going in, as I just Gust on a Sunday, going in about to be 24-7. They fumble. Miami turns around, throws a touchdown, and was on their way to a comeback. And Buffalo, same sort of thing, where they were down big, came back, got the game under control, moved the ball well against Arizona. Allen banged up his hand, and Miami's already got their running backs beat up. Achane and Mostert, those guys are always hurt. The Miami guys are always hurt, whether it's Tyreek Hill, Waddle's always in the tent. Tua has missed games in the past. He's actually been the healthiest of all these guys, at least the last year plus. Their linemen are hurt a lot. It's just it's a brittle team. It's like a bunch of it's like a bunch of sports cars that are always in the shop, because they are fast, they are explosive, but they are always hurt. Miami's laying 2. I would tease Buffalo up to 8 with Philly Monday night. You got a bunch of options. Lions laying 7 against Tampa. You could tease the Lions down. And I don't dislike that option. I will go with Philly hosting the Falcons Monday night. Philly on extra rest. Cousins looked awful in his debut. Awful, as I talked about the other day. And you're going to put Cousins in Philly, prime time, at night, hostile environment. That does not go well. Cousins can't move. Doesn't look like he has his fastball back off the Achilles. He just wasn't throwing the ball well. Wasn't moving well. Has never moved well in the first place. So Philly basically just win the game, and Buffalo plus +8 is a teaser. I probably pick Buffalo just because of Allen. If it's a tight game late, I'd rather have Allen than Tua. I know that's pretty simple, pretty lazy, but that's probably where I would go. Miami, again, has been good at home, good, you know, good September team, but Buffalo did sweep them last year. Allen has been good against Miami. Buffalo buried them in the first game, the first meeting last year in Buffalo. Remember, it was Miami off that 70-point scoring against Denver, and they went into Buffalo, and Buffalo just absolutely trucked them, and then Buffalo beat them again the final game of the season that Sunday night. Quick turnaround, too, because it's weird. You think final game of the season last night was in Miami, last year was in Miami. And so early on in the season, it's twice within, you know, I guess it's only 9 months, but it does feel like, you know, just yesterday they sort of played in that finale last year. But Buffalo beat them for the division, rallied to win the division. So Buffalo's has had their number again. Life on the line, I'd probably pick Buffalo, but I do think the going through the 3 and the 7 with the teaser up to 8, I think is a good play. Should be a close game, even though this is not an ideal teaser, like, just because it is a higher total. And hey, this could be 34-24, 30-20, somebody, just because a bunch of points are going to be scored. But I'm happy to get the two plus possessions, or the two possessions with the Bills, tease with the Eagles. We'll get to baseball here with Jason in a minute. It looks like, boy, we got the NL wild card race with four teams for three spots: Mets, Braves, Diamondbacks, and Padres. Mets are going to have a rough stretch here, and they're losing to the Blue Jays as I'm recording this. Mets are going to have a tough stretch that I think ultimately it'll probably be the other three teams making them, and they get left out. They've had a hell of a year regardless. They were so bad in May into early June. For them to turn it around and play as well as they played, A-plus season regardless of what happens, I do, and I'm rooting for them to make it. I do get the feeling they'll probably get beat by this schedule coming up. They have 13 games, 10 of them are on the road against the Phillies, the Braves, and the Brewers. That's a rough stretch. Now, you could say the Phillies, the Brewers, they're not playing for anything in terms of the division. Maybe they'll rest guys. Maybe they won't be as intense. Maybe baseball usually doesn't work like that, but I do think that schedule will burn them in 2 weeks from Tuesday. So the 24th, less than 2 weeks now, the 2 weeks from yesterday, from the Tuesday I'm recording this, the 24th, you'll get Mets-Braves, a three-game series, and you'll get Yankees-Orioles for a three-game series. And it just looks like the Yankees and the Orioles, nobody can shake anybody. Every time somebody gets up by like two is pretty much the most it's been all summer. These teams have been hot at the same time, struggled at the same time. It's sort of fitting that they're within a game or two of each other. And at least if you're the Yankees and they're losing to Kansas City, I'm recording this in Baltimore, looks like they're going to win. But either way, I would expect that series to basically decide it, to them to be within a game or so of each other going into that series. Remember, Baltimore does have the tiebreaker. The one good thing about the Yankees, and I haven't felt that this good about them in a long time, you have Schmidt back, you have Heel back, and you have Ian Hamilton out of the bullpen. Ian Hamilton might have to be end up being their closer because he's got power stuff. He might have the best raw stuff of anyone in that bullpen. And you have Dominguez finally called up, which, I don't know why they do have the things they do. How this kid wasn't good enough to be in the lineup all year, on the team all year, and now he's good enough to bat six makes no sense. All this, you know, Verdugo infatuation makes no sense. But Dominguez, with the infusion of pitching, I think gives them a few more options. We'll see how they sort it out in terms of, you know, who goes to the pen, who's a starter. Cortez came out of the pen on Saturday. It's not really perfect. You don't have, like, the Stroman and Cortez don't profile as pen guys. They don't throw hard, but you at least have more volume, more good arms with Heel, Schmidt, and Heel threw well Friday against the Cubs at Wrigley. Heel, Schmidt, Hamilton, and Dominguez, and you can get rid of the Verdugo at bats. That's a much better team than it was a couple weeks ago. So that addition of pitching at least makes you feel a little bit better. Cole's pitched pretty well here, so should be a fun race. And you know, I hate the fact that the season ends on a Sunday, and it's hard to believe, man, we're down to a few weeks left in the season. I hate the fact that it ends on a Sunday because it's just going up against the NFL. If you're going into that Sunday where it's tied or within a game and you're watching those games and all the NFL games, it's a lot at once. I much prefer it on like a Tuesday or a Wednesday where you can sort of soak it all in and focus on it and enjoy the last day of the season. Hopefully we get some drama. I think we will, at least in the National League and probably in the AOE. So Pennant Race baseball, football, fun time of the year. We will talk about it all with Jason Weingarten. This is next. This is the Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should have been more podcast. He is a fan favorite. He's a favorite of mine, and he joins us now. It is the great Jason Weingarten at Spreadopedia. Jason, what's up, man? Fun time of the year. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, it's a good time of the year. You got football, you got baseball, still got competitive baseball games. We get college football, we get NFL. It's pretty busy time of year all of a sudden.
Yeah, we'll bounce around here, and you deserve your kudos because you came on, I think, late February, early March, and you gave out some really good awards picks, and we'll get to your thoughts on these MLB awards when we come down the stretch. Any before we get to that, any baseball like futures in terms of these teams, these pennant races that interest you or think are worth a bet right now?
Yeah, I'm mostly approaching the wild card stuff game by game. Yeah, I don't know who's gonna end up in those last spots. I have a feeling the Braves might drop out at the very end. It just seems like they're going to be the team that kind of limps across the finish line. So day to day, I'm usually looking at some stuff, trying to fade the Braves unless Chris Sale's pitching. And then I'm looking to bet on the Mets more often than not down the stretch. I'm also paying attention to the Tigers. Tigers only 3.5 games back for, is it the wild card or the division?
Yes. Wild card.
It's the wild card. It's not the division.
Yeah, Cleveland's got a decent size lead on the Royals and the Twins, but the Twins haven't played well. So yeah, the Tigers, and we're recording this before the game start on Tuesday. Tigers 3 out of a wild card spot, and the Mariners quietly 3 games out of a wild card spot. And Tampa not going to get in, but Tampa's only 5 games out of a wild card spot. So yeah, Minnesota and Kansas City struggling has kind of brought everyone back to the pack here. Even Boston's not totally out of it, even though they haven't played well either.
It used to be slightly cooler when you had the pennant races, or not the pennant races, the wild card races coming down to the last day of the season. Like, I enjoy that stuff.
Me too.
It's fun to watch competitive baseball before the playoffs. I'd like to see some of these races come down to the wire. The only one I don't want to see come down to the wire is the Tigers, because I have a Chris Sale future, most strikeouts, and I really need Scooble not to start the last day of the season. That'll definitely be something I'm gonna have to pay attention to.
Interesting. Yeah, and I'm totally with you on the excitement of the wild card races, the pennant races. I have to check. I think they end the season on a Sunday again this year, which I really don't like. Yeah, I like when it was on like a Wednesday. They've done that a couple times. They sort of alternate. It's fun when it's a Wednesday. You don't have any football, and you can just focus on it, and you're sort of scoreboard watching with all the different games. Look, the Mets have done a tremendous job. You alluded to the Mets. I just worry a little bit. Their schedule coming up, they play 13 games against the Braves, the Phillies, and the Brewers, and they play 10 of those on the road at Atlanta, at Philly, at Milwaukee. I know schedules can be a little overrated. It doesn't always play out. We saw the Yankees struggle with an easy schedule, but that is a tough schedule.
Yeah, but at least you know that's your season right there. You know, you go into it prepared that you've done all this work, you got here, and now these are the games that matter, and it's up to you to perform and produce. And it's a better spot to be in, knowing other teams keep screwing up, and you know, like the ball's in the Mets court right now. They want to make the playoffs, just win those games.
Yep, absolutely. Anything on the AL East race? These teams play 2 weeks from Tuesday for 3 games. That's going to be a fun day 2 weeks from Tuesday, because Yankees-Orioles 3-game series in New York, and Mets and Braves 3-game series in Atlanta. But anything on the AL East race that you think is worth a thought, worth a bet?
I mean, it's pretty tight. Probably that series is going to be pretty important to decide the winner. I couldn't tell you which team I think is going to pull it out. I'm a little biased towards the Orioles, but it's not lost on me that the Yankees finally did the right thing and called up Jason Dominguez, which I thought was really funny. Immediately, Alex Verdugo hit a home run yesterday right after they called up Dominguez. Like, he got the memo. I think the Yankees probably get it done by a game or two. I think I said earlier that the Yankees are probably going to be in the World Series. I think I said that at the beginning of the year. I still kind of think that. I think playoffs, anything can happen, but I would not surprise me if this is a year the Yankees finally get back to the World Series.
You know, I wouldn't have thought that all summer, but they finally, like you said, they called Dominguez, and they got some of this pitching back with Schmidt and with Heelback, who actually threw a pretty good game on Friday for the first time in a while, and Ian Hamilton in the bullpen. So if you can shore up the bullpen and just shorten the shorten your pitching staff come playoffs, it's not impossible. And if you win the division, that's obviously a huge leg up. Awards. You've been great on these. You gave out Jackson Merrill. I think on this show, 75-1 sale at like 50-1 for Cy Young. Those tickets are obviously in fantastic shape. Do you think anything we'll start with this. Do you think anything right now, if you had no bets in pocket, is there anything worth a bet right this moment on these awards?
I mean, if you have no money on anything right now.
Yes.
I would probably take a stab at Skeens. If you can get like 4.5, 5-1, I see it's been moving around a bit. Merrill's been as high as like -1100, -1000. Now he's like -550 at FanDuel. A lot of that stuff, like when you see a move from like -1000 to -550, like I don't necessarily put a ton of stock in a move like that. Like it's a big deal. It's big, it's a big number or whatever. But like, we're talking about going from like a 9% chance to a 15% chance or an 18% chance of winning for Skeens. So I have them at about 20%. Like I have it 80-20. Trujillo, kind of honorable mention. I think it's weird, all things considered, that Trujillo is putting up the numbers he has and is probably going to get third. Even though, like, I would probably make the argument that if you think Merrill's first, I think Trujillo might be second. But you can't discount everything Paul Skeens has done. He has a 2 ERA, 120 innings or so, most strikeouts for a Pirates rookie. Fantastic numbers any way you cut them. It doesn't mean that he's bad. It just means, I think Jackson Merrill's better and I have a huge ticket on it. So I'm obviously slightly biased, but Skeens is very deserving. It's just at the end of everything, like the award's rookie of the year, not rookie who's been best since Paul Skeens got called up in May. So you reward the guy who played the whole season here. I do think Skeens gets a couple first place votes. Like by a couple, I mean 7-6, somewhere around there at this point. Possibly even pushes a little higher. Like I said, if I didn't have any money on this right now, I would definitely take Skeens as a dog here. But I just don't see the arguments. I see the arguments from Pirates fans, why he should win. I see the numbers. Like I'm not discounting the numbers and saying, boy, he's bad here and you guys are stupid and not seeing what I'm seeing. Like he's crazy. He's odd. Like he strikes everybody out. But unfortunately, Merrill has exceeded that. So I'm going to go 80-20 Merrill Skeens here.
Yeah, and we'll see if and when Skeens makes his last few starts. I never bought this idea that like September 1st they would shut him down, but I also don't buy this idea that he's going to like completely finish out the season. We're already at recording this September 10th, so maybe he misses a start or two at the end, but is that enough to swing people's votes? I think if I had to guess today, Merrill probably wins a very very close vote. Anything else in these awards interest you? Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, it's like not to nitpick, but like Skeens dominated yesterday against the Marlins. The Marlins are
very good team.
What are they? They're already eliminated, 54-90. They're a terrible team. The other game I watched them dominate recently was Cincinnati Reds. Another yeah. sub-500 team, 70-75, whatever. Their lineup's pretty crappy at this point, too. Like, you needed to see Skeens dominate the Reds and the Marlins to decide that he's the rookie of the year. Well, Jackson Merrill's just, killing it in San Diego, playing for a team that almost has the most wins in baseball. Like what are they, 4-5 off the Phillies and the Dodgers right now? I don't see how you can just have these arguments based on the contributions of both guys to their team. But again, none of it means Skeens is bad. The way I describe this, it's like the Wembanyama defensive player of the year thing. Like next year, Skeens is going to be like 8-1 or 10-1 for Cy Young, and everyone's going to bet on him. And he might go wire to wire and win it. You're just never going to get 50-1 on Skeens to win again. Like, just like you're not going to get a huge number on Wembanyama to win Defensive Player of the Year. And it doesn't mean your bet was bad or anything. It just means there's one other guy who was better.
Any other awards interest you? I guess AL Rookie of the Year is close now. Wells,
Yeah, so time. That one, it's kind of funny because I think you asked me if Wells could win at 100-1, and I was like, no, probably not. And then I went and bet Jason Dominguez, and Dominguez never got called up, and all those tickets are dead. And now Austin Wells is the favorite at FanDuel. So it's a reminder that sometimes, you know, I say, what do I know? I don't really know anything. I'm telling the truth. I thought Colton Cowser was kind of going to run away with this, similarly to Merrill, and the sense that he's been the everyday starter since day one. And now all of a sudden the market's saying, well, hold on, Austin Wells has a shot, and Luis Hill has a shot again, I guess. But, you know my opinion on pitchers winning, it just doesn't happen. So, yeah, Cowser versus Wells, I guess all those 100-1 tickets on Wells that I totally ignored are very live. Like I said, what do I know?
Yeah, I tried to tell you earlier than your judge at 16-1 too, man. It's just, you know, maybe you listen once in a while. Maybe you listen one day.
What was I saying? Sometimes I don't listen. It's not the first time I've ignored somebody giving me 100-1. I always say base winner asked me, do I think Robbie Ray could win Cy Young at the All-Star break? He was 100-1. I was like, yeah, I don't know. I guess, like, sure. I'm not going to bet it, but like, go for it. And then he won Cy Young. So, you know. Yeah. That's my Achilles heel. Maybe I got to listen to people better.
Two-part question. What will this open and what should this open next year? Ohtani to win the MVP. Coming off a 50-50 season, and now you're going to put him on a Dodgers team back on the mound. What do you think he'll open? What would you open him?
4-1, 3.5-1, 4.5-1, somewhere between 3.5, 4.5-1.
Gil said minus 200.
No, really? You're going to open him that big of a favorite? I mean, just remember, so many things can go wrong. Like he could be out for a month, you know, tweak his knee or whatever, and then you don't win. Like there's just so many. Like you want some money on him. Like if people are gonna come in, like you want to ride a ticket or two. Like I wouldn't go to 200 to start, but you know,
That's the number I had in mind, that they would open him like 2-1, just because he is coming off 50-50. Now you're gonna put him back on the mound.
I mean, the thing is I guess you have to keep in mind that you're probably going to get some action on him, whatever you open him at. So opening him at like 4.5-1, when you can open him at, you know, 2.5-1 and still ride the bets. Like, you know, I guess you could do it lower, but I wouldn't do minus 200 to start. I get it. But like, you know, there's other dudes that are very good baseball players in the National League.
I want to move on to football, but this is a foregone conclusion. He's going to win this award because I saw him get as low as like he was minus 3,000 at one point. Now he's like minus 900, minus 800. Lindor creeping up. Lindor has a chance or no chance for MVP?
Chance on Lindor?
Yeah. Does Lindor have a chance this year or no?
Don't think so. Okay. It's a good argument. It's a better argument than when it was Vlad versus Ohtani the first time he won the MVP. Like it's Too bad for Lindor that Ohtani exists, because any other year he'd be the MVP.
Yep, I agree. Football, NFL Week 1, any takeaways?
It was good to have football back. I was a little disappointed as a Packers fan watching the game in Brazil and seeing the bad field. But Sunday was fun. I did well in the morning and then gradually gave some of my winnings back in the afternoon. And on the Rams, which was unfortunate, but I was actually impressed with the Rams, considering they played with basically no starting offensive line and took the Lions to overtime. I don't know, it was a good week. I was impressed with the Saints. I thought they played well. I have a lot of bets on Taysom Hill this year. You know, like offensive player of the year at 1,000-1. I don't think he got utilized very much week one, like, cause he didn't need to be. Still don't think he's going to win, but, I'm interested to see how the Saints use Taysom Hill in a game like they will this weekend versus the Cowboys. It was good first week. I'm glad football's back.
Anything for week two, and did week one trigger any awards bets NFL for you?
I'm going to go through the award stuff today. I'm actually going to write something for VSiN on the awards. Typically I write a couple things and then I stop writing because I just don't really actually enjoy writing very much. but I remember this thing Ray Bradbury said about if you write one thing, He said stories, but you write one story a week, every week for 52 weeks. He's like, I challenge you to write something that's not good out of those 52 stories, because it's impossible to write 52 things in a row that are bad. So I'm at least trying to practice the writing stuff with VSIN, because the more you do it, the better it gets. Right. And if I do it 3-4 times a year, it's just going to be, you know, not as good, even if my, you know, my last articles were just giving out Sale and Merrill and whatever, but I did the same thing with you. So I'm going to go through that today actually, and see what I did last week and update this week. I'm going to keep doing that until I get bored. So you never know when it's going to be my last article. It could be this week, could be all season, but I'm going to try to keep some progress here. But yeah, I just started looking at week two this morning. I mentioned the Saints. I'm definitely betting the Saints. Other than that, I bet the Broncos. Broncos +3 at home. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but one little like nugget I always like to tell people, that it's not totally, you know, actionable, but it's always worth knowing. First 2 weeks of the season, the Broncos at home have a higher win percent than Nick Saban as head coach of Alabama. So wow. Early season altitude really affects road teams, and Steelers kind of have this dreaded back-to-back road games, you know, with the second game in Denver. So there's always a situation where I look weeks one and two for Denver home games, and you get a Denver team, even with Bo Nix, playing a Steelers team on back-to-back road games, you'll get my attention. So that's my favorite bet for week two.
And I'm looking for the bet I like. Jameson Williams, Offensive Player of the Year. For some reason, I can't find it here. I'll shop around. Hopefully, I can find it. I thought he was awesome for the Lions the other night, and they just have so many weapons that you can't guard him. He was really good in college, so that's one that's interesting to me. Last couple before I get you out of here. The McCaffrey thing with the 49ers. He is ruled out. His backup, Mason, has a huge game. He says after the game, hey, I knew since Friday I was starting. Is this something in your mind? Nothing. Should the 49ers be, you know, criticized for lying? Any thoughts on that whole situation?
I mean, I think we sort of just kind of take it that teams do stuff like this. So, like, I'm not shocked. I think Mason clearly went off script and said something he didn't realize he was, you know, not supposed to say to the media and on you know, live TV or whatever. I think the NFL probably reminds teams to not do stuff like this, and the 49ers probably get a fine, and Mason probably gets talked to and reminded to not do this again. But is it a big deal? I mean, yeah, in the sense that like we have the legal sports books and information, and, you know, obviously some people knew about it before other people and were betting it, whatever. But do I care about it? No, not particularly. That's just like I just don't really care at the end of the day. Like, it was a good situation, and there are plenty of ways to attack it. Like you were saying, with the most rushing yards for Mason, or like I was telling you, Kyle Juszczyk over receptions, because we knew he was going to be on the field a lot, you know, a lot more in his receiving option, whatever. But no, I don't really care. It's just kind of what you got to deal with if you want to pay attention to this stuff.
Yeah, by the way, Jameson Williams, 250-1 at DraftKings for offensive player.
It's a good number. I mean, the offensive player of the year, if you really look at it as the award for the non-quarterback, then you're always just trying to narrow down who's the best skill player on every team. And I don't hate that one.
And he's on a good team. He's really talented. So he's going to be at least in the spotlight. And yeah, back to your point about McCaffrey, it's just, they have enough plausible deniability where they could have said that they could say, hey, we told them on Friday to be ready. We didn't know if McCaffrey was going to play a little or a lot or not at all. So you could make it vague, but I do think it's a little sketchy. Hey, these books are, you know, taking deals, their partners with all these betting companies, to out and out lie, I think is a bad look. But again, it's probably it's hard to enforce it. Last one, Colorado football, Deion Sanders. What are your thoughts? This seems to be going off the rails here. Is this a team you're looking to fade?
You know, I really thought he'd get a couple more weeks out of you know, everything, and he brought in like 53 transfers or something crazy this year. So on the experimental level, like, it's legitimately interesting to see a coach come in and literally turn the entire roster over with transfers from other programs and his sons and try to be successful. But, you know, since the beginning, we had all this evidence that Deion Sanders isn't a particularly good coach. We had all this evidence that he was bringing his kids in and Travis Hunter to basically showcase them and build their brand and get them ready for the NFL. And we all let it happen anyways, because, you know, it was kind of entertaining and it was good TV and they won a couple games. And, you know, that upset against TCU really hurt them last year because it set the expectations way too high. And then they started, as I like to say, believing their own bullshit. And, you know, it was just downhill from there. And this year, shaping up to just be a disaster. I listened to the game on the radio because I was in the car, and I got to listen to the Nebraska broadcast, and they were very quick to point out, like one or two drives into the game, that Colorado was getting no push from their guards and centers on the Nebraska defensive line. And they basically all but said the game was over at that point, because they couldn't, you know, not only couldn't control the point of attack, but they couldn't do anything. They couldn't move Nebraska's interior defensive line and give Shedeur Sanders any time to throw. And it's like, I love to pick on Shedeur Sanders, but, you know, the reality is no quarterback's going to be successful when they don't have time to go through their reads and throw the ball. So, you know, I think Colorado's in for a long season. I don't know how they fix their offensive line problems. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if this is Deion's last season. I can't see this lasting a particularly long time before more people sour on the Deion experience. But the one thing, I hate Colorado State too. I don't want to bet on them this weekend. I know they're going to be, you know, coming off that overtime loss last year and want revenge for that or whatever, but doesn't really get me going. I think I'll probably try to stay away from this game this week and see what the Deion Sanders show brings for week four.
Jason, appreciate it, man. Let everyone know where they can find you. Thanks for coming on.
I'll be on Twitter at Spreadopedia, and you know, you find me on Gil's show in the morning, usually like Wednesdays and Fridays, and occasionally, hopefully, my articles will keep showing up on VSiN.
All right, man. Appreciate you coming on. Hopefully, we'll do this again soon.
Yeah, that was fun.
All right, that will do it. Thank you to Jason Weingarten. Rate, review, subscribe. Be back Friday. See you then.